Hello, welcome to the Devil's Trident podcast. I'm Simon, and we're here tonight, the day after a bit of a disaster. Well, quite a lot of a disaster in the Manchester Derby. I'm here with James. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Hello. Not bad, but could be better.
Could be. Well, I think we could all be better after yesterday. And Josh is back on the pod after a little bit of an absence. Well, mostly because we didn't do a few episodes, but, you know, he didn't do the last one. He'd been busy making BBC Radio. Yeah. Being a rock star.
Busy with that. Busy with new menu stuff at work. Yeah, just life is happening. So, yeah. Glad to be back. Just not the best game, let's say.
And I don't think we've done too many positive podcasts this season, to be honest with you, which is a little bit depressing. But, yeah, not a great result in the derby yesterday. Another one of those games of two halves for United, basically, which we've seen a lot of, but, you know, when you have a bad half against a very, very good Manchester City team, you quite quickly get pulled apart, as we found out yesterday. A bit of a surprise in the selection yesterday, I think, kind of forced by some absences. Obviously, no Cristiano Ronaldo, which everybody kind of knew about the night before, with players arriving at the hotel and him not being there. Also absent Cavani, which was a shock to approximately nobody. And Luke Shaw and Rafael ran out with COVID as well. So a bit of a depleted first team basically yesterday, and especially in defence and up front, in the two key areas. What do we make of the team that Ralph put out yesterday, Josh? Did you like the idea of Bruno and Pogba as basically the two strikers in the absence of any real strikers in the squad, fit and available anyway?
I like the idea of Bruno as a false nine. I think that could work. Given his, I mean, he's pass complete. He always tries to play the risky pass, I think, is what I'm saying. And I think, I feel like when United need control in games, that would probably work higher up the pitch, rather than him dropping in, trying to play a risky pass, and we just end up keep losing possession. So I think that could work. And then obviously we have the runners of, I guess, Sancho and Elanga either side of him. Pogba up there as well is confusing, given that against City you need to have as much of the ball as you can get, which obviously isn't going to be a lot. 70% possession they ended up with. That was a surprise. So the team for me, I was okay with it given the absences.
Yeah. You, James, I mean, for my part, I think I like Josh said, I wasn't too displeased with the team. I was surprised with the approach and how we configured that team. Because I personally thought it would have gone three across the middle and then, basically Bruno just on his own as a sort of false nine rather than Pogba being up there with him. What was your take on it, James? Were you into it? Our group chat was a bit fearful, I think, before kickoff.
So I saw the lineup and I think I sort of winced a bit as well. But when I saw, you know, Elanga and Sancho sort of, well, at that point, they were just names on a sheet. We didn't see exactly where they were going to play. But that excited me a little bit. A lot of pace there, a lot of creativity that could, I mean, we've won a few games at this place, you know, in recent years. So based on, you know, catching them sort of on the break and being clinical. And and the whole Pogba and Fernandes thing, again, they were just names on a sheet as well. Then when I saw it play out, I thought, wait a second, they're sort of, both playing a weird sort of false nine role. But they are extremely attacking players, those two. Like, so they get played in midfield, like, quite often. But Pogba, sometimes you get the best out of him on the wide left, you know, where he's kind of just free to create rather than be burdened by doing any defensive stuff. So that took all of that out of at least Pogba's game. But there is always that thing of like, this is where we turn it round. This is it. And so, seeing that lineup and rushing home and then sort of getting there, sort of in front of the TV, there we go, open a beer. But I don't know, the absence of the strikers, Rashford's got to be thinking, what can I do to get in this team? And I'm all for, if a player isn't playing very well, then maybe previous regimes, they would have just played them into the ground. And Rangnick likes to take people sort of out of the firing line, doesn't he? But people can play themselves into form as well. There is always that. And I'm not sure we know what kind of player Rashford is in that regard. Is he going to, I mean, is he going to eventually play himself back into form, or does he need time on the sidelines? But yeah, interesting selection for sure.
Yeah, it's, as has been covered by pretty much all the punditry since, it's, you've got to wonder what Rashford is thinking with when he can't get in the team that is just, you know, there's no Cavani, there's no Ronaldo, there's no Mason Greenwood for obvious reasons, no Martial, and he's still not getting a spot in a game, in a derby game that he, you know, he generally performs well and he's scored quite a few goals in derby matches. You know, he tends to shine in these big occasions. I mean, I get the fact that he's not in form. I don't think anybody can argue that Marcus Rashford has been good this calendar year, really. But still, you felt that there was a chance that he could be played through the middle yesterday and just do something a little more conventional with possibly Pogba off the left, like you mentioned there, James. I predicted that was going to be the 11. I didn't see Alanga start in that game just because of, I mean, I know he's a talent, obviously, but he's obviously a raw talent and it's a big game to come into, but obviously Rangnick really trusts him and he didn't have a poor game or anything like that yesterday. But yeah, the non-selection of Rashford, yeah, is a bit of a kick in the teeth for him. But then again, he came on and didn't really offer much. But let's get into the action of the first half anyway, which was all right, to be fair to us. I think we were giving them a game before half-time, certainly. And if you look at the stats, that's the more pleasant side of things to look at. You don't look at the second half stats. If you haven't looked at second half stats for this game, don't bother, because it will just depress you. I think there was no shots on target, no shots at all, wasn't it, or something? Like four touches in their box, just absolutely awful. But the first half was decent. I mean, we should probably start with the City goal, the first goal. I mean, a lot of the goals were weak yesterday. I felt that we should have seen them coming. That first goal in particular, Josh, is just one that City score all the time. It's that cutback, that's where Raheem Sterling scores all his goals, and that's why you get such good goal scoring figures. I know he didn't score the goal yesterday, but you know, that's the kind of situation that they create to put chances on the plate for players, and happened again yesterday. But that was the one where Tellers was pointing at someone to pick up De Bruyne, and obviously no one made it there, because Maguire couldn't see that Tellers was pointing at him because he had his back to him, which it was just a bit of a bit of a shambolic episode, that one. Go on.
Gonna have to point a bit louder, Tellers, I think. I mean, worrying that 5 minutes in, those City's patterns of play that would just expose us so easily. You always think, with goals where it's a cutback as well, you always think that surely someone has just had a look and thought, hang on, like De Bruyne or Gundogan are probably going to run from deep and are probably going to try and get on the end of something here. Like, Gundogan scored about 20 goals last season doing this. And the fact that no one really did that, like, you know, a ball can go wide and like you cannot stop the cross, like sometimes it was a good ball in as well.
It evaded about three of our men.
Yeah, just how easily that De Bruyne was just stood there, and like they've got so many players that you don't want to leave in that position, but leaving Kevin De Bruyne on his own on the penalty spot 5 minutes into the derby as well, it's just like, you know, I'm sure like, you know, like old school managers will say like, don't do anything stupid in the first 10 minutes of the game, and then we go and do that. It is indicative of the sort of not quite mentality, but just sort of like the, seems to be so little like fight in the United team to not sort of go out there and like try and not let City play the game. Yeah, and then this is what happens, and it was a real worry.
They're very easily knocked out of this team. They're very fragile.
Yeah,
they're not very good at withstanding any sort of pressure, and they were getting a lot of pressure on. I mean, it was only 5 minutes in this goal, but generally over the course of the game, you know, Wan-Bissaka was getting bullied down that side because they were just overloading him, weren't they?
And yeah,
they'd obviously sensed a bit of weakness, and I think you were talking about that last night, James, when we saw each other, that they were kind of, they did that on purpose.
So it's one of these things that Guardiola likes to do. There's other sort of United covering channels that have sort of got into this in more detail, but I'll just skim over it because obviously I don't want to recycle their material. But to be fair, it's in Guardiola's books and stuff, it seems, or, you know, the coaching manual of his career. And he likes to sort of focus attacks, yeah, it's like on a say they do find a weakness, yeah, they exploit it, but it's where they stop the attacks. So if the attack does break down, then the person who starts the play up for us again, then if it's someone like Wan-Bissaka, who, for instance, that's not his strong point, is it starting the move going forward, you know, us countering, be that because of a poor first touch, or maybe it's just, he knows, I think he even must know some of his limitations. Slide tackling and one-on-one defending is his thing. That's his massive strong point. But like sort of dribbling the ball out, picking the right pass, executing the right pass, and performing well under sort of immense pressure in terms of actual pressing, I don't think are his strong points. But I think City knew that. And yeah, that's where they were stopping, you know, they finishing the attacks on his side so that he had to sort of, yeah, pick things up from scratch. And it worked like a charm. And it's a shame. It's a shame to see us be any of the United players or the team as a whole, you know, be targeted like that. As look, there are gaping weaknesses that we can take joy out of. Yeah, it was a massive shame. It wasn't very good to watch.
No. I mean, I can't remember loads of chances in that half, in that they were absolutely battering us. I think that was the same throughout the game, really. I don't think they bombarded our goals at any point. It was just simply that they passed us to death. They toyed with us like they did in the home game, basically. But we did show signs. Obviously, those signs were going to be on the counter attack, because they tend to be, and that tends to be where United have been the best counter attacking for the last 3 or 4 years now, haven't they? Like, as a rule, and not being able to do too much of the other side of the game. But that goal that we did score was a good example of what United can do when they're in them positions, and it was a lovely goal. It's nice to see Jadon Sancho blossoming now, Josh, because I know you'll be happy about that. We've spoke about Jadon Sancho a lot over various podcasts over the last 6 to 9 months, and it does feel like he's at least becoming a United player now properly.
I think he's now got to start every game. I think I'm a little surprised to see that he's not. I always feel like the plan was to do Rashford left, Sancho right. And clearly that's not, given the form of certain players, that's not quite worked out. He always looks good on the ball, Sancho. I think even the first games where he weren't like performing super well, he always looks comfortable on the ball. The more he gets used to his teammates, obviously. Like, I feel like he was anticipating the pass more from Pogba. You know, he's getting used to playing with Pogba, Fernandes, people like that. Yeah, it was a great finish. He's great at carrying the ball. I think he's... In this season, his kind of like, well, just signing him and then him kind of like growing into the role has been like one of the few positives we can take. But yeah, it was nice to see him get a goal. I wish they'd celebrated a little bit more.
Yeah.
he seemed a touch reluctant to.
Yeah, I didn't know what to read of that, because they were booing his every touch, weren't they? And I don't know if he was just I don't know if he was being muted or nonchalant. I can't quite decide which one it was. But yeah, lovely goal, James, and yeah, a lovely counter, and Bruno's dummy run kind of made it, but Sancho's finish was just beautiful, really. He had time to set himself, obviously, but he didn't have a lot of angle to play with either without a chance.
No, it was sublime, and the nice little passing move in the build-up there. I mean, maybe this is the kind of thing that... I mean, we were doing stuff like this under Solskjaer, but it was very... The pace was there. It was very intense. It was, we've got a chance, now go, break, quick. And yeah, ball gets played to Sancho, and he's still got quite a lot to do. And we know he's a good dribbler, confident on the ball, as we've said. But it almost seemed like the chance had gone. And then he sort of dribbles it back. And then, yeah, the finish is just really good. And as I said in the group chat, you know, that moment at least, because we know it's a Manchester derby, and we know that United aren't at their best this season, even, or even for a few years, we've not been like our scintillating best. So I just said, despite what else happens in this game, this right here is unbridled joy. And it was great, because for Sancho coming in, there's question marks about him. There's question marks about all the United players, obviously. But again, that's what we didn't need. We've chased this guy for 2 or 3 years now, haven't we? And he finally is here. He's here and he's perfect, as the social media generation might say. I won't, although I just have. But he sort of does start slowly, and we've said that on the pod as well. It's been proven his output over the past few seasons has come, you know, mainly towards the turn of the year. And the numbers he's been able to put up have been really good. Now, to see him again at the Etihad, because, like, you know, they were booing him, they're booing him senseless. And to take the initiative and stick one in their net was really good. And yeah, the celebration, I agree. I think it's a mixture of both. I think being a bit mooted, he didn't want to take the absolute piss because he still probably in the back of his mind thought, yeah, we could still get dick. Let's not go mental. I don't want to meme myself. But yeah, it was very, it was very reserved, but also cheeky. It was cheeky in that sense because they were booing him and that was just him staying like, all right, you're booing, but that's all it was. And I admired it. I thought it was great. Yeah, to go along with a very, very tidy finish.
Yeah. He did have another chance late on in the second half as well. Similar position, lovely bit of play. I think he started from a long ball to up to Bruno that he just chased down, but there was a nice little bit of interplay between Fred and Bruno in the box, and it eventually falls to Sancho, and he, inside the box, close to goal, probably an easier chance, but he skies it, which was, I think, if that goes in it, then, you know, if we're going at 2-2, I think, you know, the game possibly pans out differently. But that didn't go in, and City got their second before that, not long after our first one. It was, what is it, a couple of minutes after it. That one was a bit more of a calamity show, weren't it? I mean, Phil Foden does really well. I think taking the ball off Lindelof, just flicking it over him, Gazza style, basically. Without the blonde hair now. That was a brilliant touch, but then there's plenty there to make Roy Keane very angry, and he did get very angry, didn't he, about it in the post-match stuff. But yeah, just a calamity of errors of people not running back into the box. I mean, Harry Maguire, as ever at the moment, is getting criticism for his part in that, and, you know, letting the ball go before he makes an effort to intercept the shot. Obviously, he makes a block that kind of saves one of the shots, but I think there's about three or four shots in there. De Gea makes a save, but there's just three United players all crumpled on the floor by the time the ball goes, and it just looks shambolic. And it again starts, the whole move starts from basically Alanga playing a bit of too much of a casual pass out from the back. Maybe that's naivety, maybe that's, I don't know, just nerves or just being too casual. I don't know, but it wasn't a great goal to watch again. And it's a bit strange since Rangnick's come in, we have actually been better defensively, I think. Even though Maguire and Co are getting a lot of criticism, we are conceding a lot less goals statistically and looking a bit more sound at the back. But yeah, it was just, it felt like it was going to be one of those games where whatever we did, they were just going to be a little bit better. But yeah, what did you make of the second goal, Josh?
I think it's indicative of how good City are, that they can make a somewhat defensively sound United team look like that. I think as well, we have looked better, but this is a real test, and I don't think we've had, like, Atletico Madrid are a good team, but I don't think in terms of what we have to defend against, I don't think it's anywhere near what City are like. We were a bit calamitous. Like, Maguire's having, you know, he's having a bad season. Lindelof's in and out of the team. Telles and Wan-Bissaka, I would say neither of which, like, Telles very much is, I think, second to Luke Shaw. Wan-Bissaka has been out of the team to Diallo. So we've got four defenders there that must be fairly low on confidence anyway. And just to get pulled around like that, to look silly, I think it's just, to me, at this point, I was thinking, like, okay, it just shows the levels between the two teams. And it's not even, like, there's just no argument anymore, is there? They're just,
no,
like, miles ahead. And you saw this, and it's like, there, you look at their defenders, and they're full of confidence, and they'll be like, well-drilled, this is where we need to be, this is how we prevent these things. And, you know, Hassan Hüttl said that United don't want to work back, like, and especially for a team that's going to see, it's easy to get to that point where they walk through our team, pass through our team, and then all our defenders end up on the floor in the box because they've had that many shots. There's only so many times someone can get a block and De Gea can save it. But yeah, like, it to me at this point, I was just like, yeah, the gulf between the two teams is just evident.
Yeah, it's like you say, there isn't any argument in it. And I mean, we'll get to second half in a minute, but like, it's striking how much, even if I'm not that I'm big for going on Facebook or anything like that anymore, but you'll notice that there's not any real gloating from City fans and stuff. Maybe I've just hidden them all on my feed, but yeah, it's not like a, you know, we've got one over on you. It's just, it's the norm, which is pretty sad. I mean, if that result happens, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, they would be gloating, you know, we'd be getting a hard time. I don't know, too many City fans, thankfully. But yeah, it's just noticeable that there's not even that happening anymore, is there? Which is itself, like you say, indicative of where we are at the moment.
There was a real period, I think, from like 2009 to about halfway through Mourinho's tenure, I'd say, where the derbies were like great. And it was like, they were good games. And I would say both teams probably got like about an even amount of chances. Now they're just sad. Like, yeah. Even the ones we win, we don't play well. It's just...
The thing is, we're now winning them. Well, when we have won quite a few in the last, you know, like five or six. I think it's like four out of the last six. But we're winning them as underdogs, which is, you know...
Yeah, I know.
It's a sad state of affairs, but... Back to that second half, which is something I don't really want to talk about too much, to be honest with you, but we got to. It was, I think I put in the comment after the game that it was limp and lifeless, because it just was, wasn't it? We offered absolutely nothing. Now, was that them being really good and just passing us to death and us just, you know, just not being able to do anything because they're so good? Or was it us giving up, James, do you think? Or was it a little bit of both? I think that got put to Rangnick at the final whistle, and I don't think he was asked if they gave up, but, you know, he was asked if it was United being poor or City being good, and he kind of said a bit of both, but, you know, City are amazing.
Yeah, well, there was one of our lads at Football Tonight said that's the best he's ever seen City play in that second half. And as well as I can sort of agree that they did play well, they did play very well, United don't really have a central midfield. Like, no. I know that's like me banging the same drum all over again, and I like those players. There are players. But if City sort of wanted to find space and exploit it, they just sort of could, really. Yeah. They've got like loads of number eights, haven't they, essentially, that just kind of, I don't want to like lord loads of praise on them, but it's one of those. They're clever. They've got a midfield, at least, that's very clever and disciplined, and ours, I don't know. Unfortunately, if you wanted to compare the two teams, theirs is like a sort of a slick machine, and ours is the players lying on the floor next to the goal line. Really, it's like just looking hapless and being like, "How did we?" But on that second goal, I was really, really peeved. I was really, really peeved by the fact that Alex Telles. I know it all happened in an instant. It all happened really quickly. But why is he playing that ball right back across the box? I mean, I don't know. Surely he has time to react slightly differently to it, but maybe I'm being overly picky there, but that's the one place you don't want to be putting it, surely. Like, it's not as if it rebounded off him. I think he made an effort, didn't he, to kick the, to sort of clear it. I'm so angry, I'm shaking my stand here. But yeah, just even if you just let it go past him, it'd have gone out for a corner, or I don't know. I've just got this image in my mind over and over again of De Bruyne just taking that shot. It was two goals. They were both very similar sort of distances, weren't they? Just came strolling in, and he had two bites of the cherry, that second one. But second half, sorry, yeah. It was sad. It was, I don't want to even admit, I don't want to say that the players gave up. I can't find it in me to say that they might have done, but I don't know. That's just a very sad state of affairs, that, isn't it? If they're just going to go to the Etihad and be like, yep, you know, 60 minutes in, we're done.
I think it's just as much fed up of it rather as much as giving up. And you know, when they are passing you to death like that, I mean, what was the possession stat that came up during the game, which, you know, got a lot of attention, like 92% to 8%.
92, yeah.
But I was talking to someone we were at the pub last night with James, and one of our friends, it was like, he's an Arsenal fan, he's not even, you know, no allegiance either side. But he's like, it's not even entertaining though, is it? And I was like, yeah, exactly. I don't find watching City entertaining. I know I'm not going to when it's against us, but it's just a bit boring, isn't it? Whether that sounds bitter, I don't know. But do you want to watch a team just pass a team to death and not really actually do much with it? Because through choice, really, weren't it? It's just toying with us and not really creating too many chances as such, or having getting too many shots off. I just don't find it very exciting. But then again, that's probably just sound like me being bitter, but. Yeah, it was an upsetting second half, definitely. You can chase down every ball and and get nowhere with it, and you eventually get made to look silly, don't you? I think it got levelled at like Lingard and Rashford that they weren't putting much effort in. Did anybody really notice that they were like phoning it in? I didn't particularly, to be honest, but
they didn't stick out as like. I didn't particularly think that those were the two that were culpable of not really getting stuck in, let's say. I think, yeah, everyone's heads were down, I think, in the second half. I think, and there was probably like a lack of, like, as soon as City came out, and what time was the 68 minutes to third goal? I think as soon as City came out in the second half, and it was just like, oh, we're just going to struggle to get the ball. I think, there was probably like the psychological element of like, we know that we're going to. The chances of us actually getting something out of the game now City are in this mood, they've already got the lead, are slim.
Yeah, I think they just couldn't, United couldn't use the ball either, did they? But maybe that's an element of panicking and trying to rush things too much, but we just gave the ball straight back to them pretty much, didn't we? And it was, I think by about the, just before the third goal, I don't even think I was watching, you know, when they put that corner in. I think I was scrolling Twitter, just accepting that this was going to go this way. But the third goal, for me, it's a bit weak as well. I know that Roy Keane said that in the post-match stuff. I mean, it's a good finish. I mean, it takes a bit of a deflection, but I don't understand how he's so free on the edge of the box there, James. Would you agree, or do you have to just tip your hat to a good finish?
It was a good finish, but he tried that 2 minutes before. So they had a warning about that. They were going to try and be creative from these set pieces. And I don't know. I'm at that point, really. I'm like the players on Sunday.
That's how it felt watching it, weren't it, though?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm going to try and be animated because I'm not just going to sit and moan. But, it was a good set piece, executed well with a finish. But they did have that warning. And it's just a few instances for those first two goals as well, especially the first one. I think it's the first one, sorry. No, maybe the second one. De Bruyne just, no one's following him or tracking him. And
the first
we touched
one,
on it before, but be aware. Like, at least be more aware. Or I don't know. The lack of quality between our midfield and theirs is a thing. But I guess, I don't know, just it's all about being present and being, it just all seemed a little too easy. At that point, anyway, it seemed a bit too easy. But with that third goal, yeah, just disappointing to concede that way. But again, there were sort of shades of Iron Robin about that, just a little. You know, that Bayern Munich one we conceded a few years back.
Oh, gosh. That's my least favourite goal of all time.
Yeah. Not a nice goal. No, that half, well, it just kind of faded out into a drubbing, which is, it's a weird thing to say, I know, but United literally offered nothing. We had Alanga was through, I think, at one point, and got tackled by Cancelo and it went over. So that was like our only shot, and it was by them. So, yeah. And then, obviously, the last goal, I think De Gea was injured, weren't he, before that goal? And then, by the time Mahrez was going through, he'd smacked the ball at his head. And it just, it was a bit farcical. Obviously, not quite offside with the VAR call, and that's fair enough. But by that point, I don't think anybody cared anymore, did they? Even us. As fans watching it, it's like, well, what's another goal now? What does it matter? But it's sad to be feeling like this. But are we surprised that this is the result of a Manchester derby at the moment with how this season's gone? I would argue no. Would you argue with City being better than us? No, you wouldn't do. We finish, 18, 19, 20 points behind them pretty much every season at the moment, don't we? Which is, again, nothing new. So the gulf is there, we all know it's there, and I think we just have to look to next season now, but it just depends how much hope we're going to have then. I mean, I think we'll talk about who we want next, I think, later on in this episode. But any particular, on a lighter note, any particular favourite moments from the post-match discussion that we saw? Because it was quite animated with, obviously, Roy Keane getting quite into it, and Mika Richards has been called disrespectful as well for like busting out laughing while Keane was having a bit of an impassioned rant. Obviously Gary Neville's had a bit of a dig at Mika Richards as well, which is kind of just United pundits being rattled by a City pundit, really, though, weren't they? All in good, like, jest, I suppose, at the end of the day, but still, that again, even the off the pitch stuff, you know, United are getting done by City.
I think what Gary Neville was saying, I mean, I rarely think he's ever wrong, Gary Neville, to be honest, but I think when he was sort of dissecting the Rangnick appointment, I think he was right. And Mike Richards did seem to be sort of arguing for no reason. I think what Neville was saying was quite objective, like, you know, the Rangnick won't be appointed, like, he won't be appointed, like, 100% he won't be manager next season. And I don't, he was sort of saying it wasn't necessarily a bad idea of him coming into this group. And I think what frustrating was about the Mike Richards thing, when Roy Keane said something, the response was, he just burst out laughing. And I think I saw a lot of people that are criticising it, and this is probably because I follow very, very boring and objective people about football on Twitter, is that they sort of maybe want a higher level of actual analysis and punditry, where I think Roy Keane was saying quite a lot, and then it's almost like the response was to, if Mike Richards just burst out laughing there, it's going to be a great viral clip for Sky Sports. That. Whereas I think I didn't see anyone say it was disrespectful. Well, sorry, the people that I follow, I didn't say what it was disrespectful. It was like, sort of, what, a bit more actual analysis.
Yeah, City don't really have a legend like that, do they? Like, you know, like a, I'm not saying Keane necessarily dissects stuff, but, you know, Gary Neville certainly does. But City don't really have an equivalent yet from their 10-year history. No. So, yeah. James, what did you make of it? In particular, the Gary Neville stuff, the Gary Neville point on Rangnick, because I did think that was interesting. And it is something, when Rangnick came in, I was also personally for it, in the sense that it seemed to make sense as a long-term thing. But there was caveats to that, as in, where is he? Who's going to be the next manager, for one? You know, if he's going to have a say in that and kind of, you know, steer United to a certain appointment, then that would make sense and stuff. But on the flip side of it, trying to change this team's style of play for the second half of the season was always going to be difficult. It shouldn't be impossible, though. That should be said, because I've seen some journalists saying, like, interim managers don't come in and overhaul the team's style. Like, but I mean, I know Thomas Tuchel wasn't an interim manager, but he came in and made a difference pretty quickly, like pretty starkly from Lampard, didn't it? So it's not like it can't be done. But yeah, what did you make of what Gary Neville was saying? Because I would tend to agree with him personally, but I know there's plenty of people that don't.
I agreed with him on pretty much everything. It would have been interesting to hear him finish a sentence, though, without Mika Richards just shouting him down. And that's what got irritating, though. That's where Neville had to say, look, you're ranting, just stop. But he didn't mean like you're not talking any sense. He was like, I was listening to it this morning, actually, as I was getting ready. And I couldn't even see the screen. I was just sort of pottering around my room, I had it on YouTube. And I'm thinking, it's hurting my ears, this. Just let him finish. It's like, just, you know, I don't know why people do that. I just chipped in at him and started being rash and just kind of being sensational. And he knows that's going to go viral. We live in that kind of world now, which is such a shame.
You know,
it's like, this is going to get cut up and memed, and then Roy Keane will see it, you know, in the studio weeks later, and we can have a laugh, and it's all a big laugh and stuff. And the thing is, I've got a lot of respect for Mika Richards going in and having this kind of childlike wonder. And he's opposite. No, because he's the kind of like the counterpoint between Souness of the old guard, of course, very sort of, you know, and then Roy Keane, of course, of the old guard, and it's all very serious, and football was always serious. And when Ronaldinho came along, we'd rather he didn't smile ever, because you're not allowed. It's serious. but Mika Richards injects a bit of, again, like I say, childlike wonder. It's kind of not naive, but it's like, I mean, he's my age. But if he's not going to let people finish the sentences, and he's going to just laugh his head off all the time, it just, that's, I don't think it was disrespectful to Roy Keane. I just think it's disrespectful, like, again, to the viewers at home and stuff. It's like, Keane has the right to make an impassioned. That's very similar to, and don't get me wrong, no one can get on the high horses, because we all remember, what was it, when Steven Gerrard was on BT, and he said something about, like, well, I never won the Premier League, so, and Paul Scholes just sort of went like this. Oh, sorry, I've realised it's an audio podcast, but we are doing a video link out. But he did, I was going to do it. But he did the smallest of little smirks, didn't he? But it was, I mean, is that okay? I don't know. It's not for us to decide. But if he just pissed himself laughing, I know there's rivalry in sport and stuff, but there is that line. Like on Sundays, I'm going to get a bit football cliche-y here, but it's on Super Sunday. One day in the past, someone decided we need to be in formal wear. We need to, you know, almost top and tails. This is serious. This is we're broadcasting on a, you know, on the Sabbath, and we need to, you know, and I just. And then, of course, the Dwight Yorks of this world came and blew everybody out of the water, and it became a fashion contest then almost, which is all different. But I just don't think there's a place for... I think you've got to read the room. But, you know, what happens in the studio stays in the studio, I guess, and it doesn't affect things on the pitch as such. But in short, Neville, yeah, I've always got time for Neville's opinions at this moment in time, situation whereby...
I think cynically, though, I feel... I mean, recently there was the Keane and Carragher arguing and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was in the middle of them laughing. I know, like, I would not put it past some producer to sort of be like to Mike Richards, oh, just, you know, just when he finishes, just burst out laughing. You know, something along those lines. Because, like, I think Gary Neville said that... I can't remember what it was on, actually. I'm sure I listened to him and he was saying that he feels that the Sunday afternoon crowd... is a different crowd to the Monday night football crowd. Like the Monday night football crowd is people that want stats, breakdown, analysis.
Nerds.
But yeah, me.
Mate. Yeah.
And then Sunday afternoon is more casual viewers. They want more personality. Yeah. So I think, and he was saying there's a time and a place for both. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if there was a conscious decision of let's do this, let's get another viral clip. I think it's gone a bit too far and it sort of irks some people. But that's good publicity for Sky, so I'm sure.
Yeah. Keane was genuinely livid though, weren't he? He was like absolute.
Yeah.
It weren't even that that style of Roy Keane where, you know, he'd a bit of a smirk and whatever. It was literally like glaring, which was mate, I think that's kind of what made it highlighted so much anyway. But go on, James.
No, I was just going to say that Sky Sports News, it's a cynical view, but it's the truth. I mean, they've got their own YouTube page that they want to promote. They've got hits, likes, subscribes that they need, all this. It's sensationalism. And not only that, it's clickbait as well. If you scroll past, I'm a frequenter of YouTube. I love it. I can't get through a day without about watching several clips that have varying relevance to anything. Sometimes they're just nonsense, but it keeps me going. You will scroll past these must-see argument between Keane and Carragher and da-da-da, and it's gone. It's clickbait, isn't it? Do you not agree? It's sad, really.
That is the way it is, and it's when it's City and United, particularly United, it is a big story. Whilst we have a quick break, we'd like to ask for a tiny favour. If you're enjoying the Devil's Trident podcast, it'd be a massive help to us if you could leave a review on your favourite podcast app or even share our new episodes whenever they're released. We post each new release from our Facebook, Instagram or Twitter, so the options are plentiful, we'd be very grateful, and more United fans would find us. What a result. Back to the United kind of managerial thing that Neville was touching on and kind of alluding to with where Rangnick was going to take it and where, you know, whether there was much point to this. I think it was actually more Micah Richards that was and Jamie Redknapp that were making this point more. So that what's the point in him coming in? Was it a good move? Should they not have just got Conte or whatever? But I think we're all going to be fed up by, well, I'm already fed up now, but I think by the end of March, April, I think we're all going to be fed up of seeing the words Pochettino and Ten Hag put next to each other in sentences or put photos of them, because, you know, that's going to be the rumour, you know, until someone is appointed. But I guess we've not really spoke about it yet because we've had other things to talk about, mostly United being shit. But do we have an idea of who we actually want, if we're going to accept that it's going to be between them, or are we not going to accept that it's going to be between them and wanting somebody else? Josh, your kind of preference at this point? Or does it, and will it even matter? Will it change things, I guess, is the bigger point. Like,
so, no is the answer to that question. Is that I feel that to operate on the level we want to, which is winning titles, winning trophies, we need to have a structure in place throughout the entire club that teams like City and Liverpool have, a manager that has control over the transfers, a team that advise who to buy, which fits with the coaching, that fits with all that, smart buys as well. You know, the right coaching to bring through youth players and some to fit in the team properly. An example would be Liverpool buying Harvey Elliott. Can't have bought him for that much money, bought him young, and then Klopp has now coached him and he's one of, like, he's a squad player for them. We need to make sure that we have a system in place throughout the entire club to facilitate a manager to succeed. Now, I would say that Ten Hag probably has more experience in a structure like Ajax, which would be more cohesive throughout the entire club, which would probably benefit us. That being said, it's if United will put that in place, and clearly Ed Woodward didn't. So hopefully John Murto, the new guitar, his name's pronounced, hopefully he's, you know, he said a statement recently, it's like that the club's been successful, winning things is one of his key aims. And I think with the way that the competition of it, particularly City and Liverpool, we can't do anything other than that to actually compete. City probably already have an idea if Guardiola's looking like he was going to leave, he weren't going to renew his contract, they would already have a bunch of coaches in mind who can fit into the mould of what the club wants to achieve in terms of the style of football, the coaching, all this. That being said, is the club capable of doing that? We could easily get to a point where we do it half-assed. We get Ten Hag, he tells our players to run, and then we end up in this situation. Whereas Pochettino's a bit flashier, isn't he? He's got nice suits.
That's good reason.
So out of the two of them, I'd say Ten Hag, because of, I know Ajax doing really well, obviously. As a manager that can come in and fit in a club with a structure that we need to, the club needs to compete on the pitch and off the pitch, I would say.
Yeah, well, I think Rangnick is, the idea is obviously that Rangnick helps put that in place with John Murta and Darren Fletcher. But like you say, I mean, Richard Arnold's coming now, obviously Woodward's gone. So there's a lot of change at the top of the club and a lot of promises that, you know, they're going to be putting the structures in place that we need. But I mean, I would think that Rangnick would prefer Ten Hag in the sort of the philosophical sense, but then again, the club has always really admired Pochettino, and you kind of think that the United way of doing things is kind of going for the glamour option.
Yeah,
not that Pochettino's got nothing more to him than being a glamour, but he's been liked by Ferguson for ages, hasn't he? And he's well respected in the Premier League by the majority of fans, I think. So yeah, I just don't know how that tallies up. I don't know. I don't really know what Rangnick thinks of Pochettino. I think he's kind of what I'm getting at there, whereas I'm pretty sure there's comments on him, or at least comparisons to Ten Hag.
Just looking that he's got a 74% win with rate with Ajax, Ten Hag, which is crazy high.
In a weaker league, though, I think is the
yeah.
But then again, yes. Pochettino's in a weaker league, but he's running away with it. I mean, I think Ajax are pretty well clear in the Dutch league as well. So they're probably not a good measure, really. I don't think the particular league statuses. I mean, they're expected to win the league, and well, PSG didn't even win it last year, did they? In France, but I think the Champions League performances and just how well they build squads, how well they get the team playing, is something to focus on. And Ten Hag has had his team stripped away, hasn't he, from that one that did well in the Champions League when Spurs put them out. Well, Pochettino put them out, didn't he? He's had to rebuild that team, and they've gone again and, you know, rebuilt and just had just as good. Yeah, so you're falling into the Ten Hag camp at the moment then. James, do you have a preference out of those two, or would you go someone else?
Well, our Arsenal supporting friend last night asked me this very question, and I was 6 pints in and off the back of a sort of rather dismal Man United display against City of all teams. So my response was, I don't care, which come off quite blunt at the time. Yeah, don't care. But I was like, and then I went on a rant about how the club's run and how things won't change unless there are fundamental fundamental things that are done differently in the future, the near future, because you can't just keep doing the same things and expecting a different result. I would expect the midfield to be invested in. But going back to if I had to pick, though, yeah, Erik ten Hag, I like what he's all about, and it could be something where he does come and put a plan in place, and like Rangnick could be sort of putting things in place for him to take the reins and then do things a certain way. That all sounds quite vague, doesn't it? But I just don't know. With United, it's hard to tell what the plan is. I do have a weird feeling, though, that we are, whether we like it or not, we're getting Pochettino. And whether we want investment in a central midfield or not, we're getting Pochettino, right? And whether he knows it or not, he's getting Ousmane Dembele, Sergio Ramos, and Aubameyang, and being told, yeah, make the most of that. It's like, oh, but I'd like a central midfield. What? No. Look, they're quite good, these. Yeah, they were in 2014. So why should we think any different? I mean, like, the transfer strategy. Yes, of course, with Sancho coming in and Varane, that's amazing. Ronaldo, again, the jury's still out on that. That deserves its own episode, maybe. But when it comes to the managerial front, was it Neville that was saying that Rangnick is almost maybe on a bit of a sort of fact-finding mission at the moment?
Yeah.
And that could be helpful, because he can just go, because guess where he's going straight after this? Into the boardroom. So if there are people that aren't pulling their weight and maybe just aren't good enough, then that's not their fault. If they're just not good enough to play for the team, and we've heard rumours that he had a list of a few players he didn't think made the cut. Well, that's when they act, and the new manager comes in, whoever that is, and then Rangnick's got, you know, a list about a mile long of things that need to change, and they can hopefully implement them. But Richard Arnold starts his reign of terror now, doesn't he, in charge? So whether we see actual change from that remains to be seen, because the Ed Woodward reign of terror is now, of course, coming to an end, and that was pretty dismal. When you step back and take a look, and even then, so again, my Arsenal supporting friend, who's called Johnny, he was saying, he was sort of, you know, about it, us getting a director of football doesn't matter. Oh, it wasn't him, actually. It's another guy. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But basically saying us having a director of football doesn't matter. I was arguing that it does, because if you had Jose Mourinho being told by someone like Ed Woodward that he didn't agree with the signings he wanted, and he's the guy ultimately that's going to pull the purse strings, that's not a football brain telling you. I mean, at least if it's Darren Fletcher or someone like that that's played in the United team and knows kind of what it takes, I don't know. I think I prefer that. So it's all very, very, it's a confusing time to be a United fan. It really is, because the future is uncertain, but it seems like the two runners, as you've said, are Erik ten Hag and Mauricio Pochettino. There doesn't seem to be any sort of outliers to that. Can you think of any? There was a rumour about sort of Ancelotti on a short-term basis, but I don't know. I like Ancelotti a lot.
Yeah, I don't see the point in another short-term thing. For various reasons, they didn't go for Conte, and I think part of that is that he's, you know, you prone to fucking off pretty quickly, isn't he, from jobs if he gets the hump or whatever. I mean, it's looked like he was going to leave Spurs a couple of occasions in the last few weeks after, what, six months? So I think that volatility sort of thing, they've done that with Mourinho already, and he obviously lasted longer than 6 months, but I think that's part of the reason United are kind of put off by Conte. But yeah, I don't see the point in going short term, and equally so with Ancelotti. To be honest with you, I think at some point both of these managers will manage United, unless one of them goes to City at some point in between. I think we'll end up with both of them over the course of time. So in that respect, I'm not too bothered who we got first, as long as Ten Hag doesn't go to City after Guardiola or whatever. I think there's a good chance we'll get them. We'll have them both at some point. I do like Pochettino. I think he had his team playing good football, and culturally within the club at Spurs, there was a lot of talk around the time that he was building that team that did all right but didn't actually win anything. But he created a good atmosphere, the same sort of way that Solskjaer did, but possibly with a bit more tactical nous about him. So, you mean, it worked at times under Solskjaer, and I'm not banging the drum for him to still be here or anything like that. But I see sense in that sort of going down that route, but then again, Solskjaer's cultural reboot has kind of fallen away for various different reasons, which again would probably be a full podcast on that. So yeah, I'm boring as it seems, I'm on the fence, because I would be happy with both of them, to be honest with you, but I don't think there's anybody else beyond that. I mean, there was talk of Luis Enrique, but with a World Cup coming up at the end of the year, he's not going to leave Spain for to come to United at this moment, is he? So, you know, I think they're the two obvious candidates, and it's just going to boil down to pretty much how well Pochettino does in the Champions League, I think, in the next, well, it's this week, isn't it, actually? They're 2-0 up against Real Madrid, aren't they, I think? So
1-0.
Was it 1-0? All right, yeah.
I think Mbappe got one at the end.
Yeah, so I mean, this week will be a big week potentially in who manages United next season. If PSG do end up going out, I think that's probably curtains for him at PSG anyway. So that'll be if he's allowed to leave PSG, or is, you know, relieved of his duty, or they part ways. You know, there's no part of the thing is buying someone out of a contract, and if United don't have to buy someone out of a contract, that will be quite appealing to the Glazers, won't it? So. There's that to bear in mind. I think the last thing I wanted to cover was, obviously, we've got Tottenham next. And the league table shows, you know, we're fifth at the moment, dropped out of that top four, which was liable to happen with the game that we had at the weekend and Arsenal having Watford. So that puts Arsenal a point ahead of us with three games in hand, which is a bit of a worry, obviously. And Spurs have won 5-0 against Everton tonight, which, since we play them on Saturday, also is a little bit of a worry. And they are now gaining on us. I think they're 2 points behind us now, with also two games in hand. So it's a six-pointer, essentially, on Saturday. And how are we feeling about it, Josh? Would you take the negativity of Sunday's game into this one, or do you think they'll find a way to bounce back against a Tottenham side that have also been quite up and down, but when they've been up, they've been quite well up compared to our, I don't know, we're a bit, definitely inconsistent. Even the good times haven't been that good for us recently.
I think, obviously they were down today. I think that our record in Rangnick hasn't been that bad. I feel like we've only lost a couple games. Spurs, yeah, they've thrashed Everton tonight, but they Burnley beat them the other day, was it? Or someone beat them.
They went out to Middlesbrough in the cup. I mean,
that was it.
Who goes out to Middlesbrough in the cup? Losers.
Yeah, at least in 90 minutes. God, yeah. How embarrassing. We can beat them. We can easily beat them. But we could also play horrendous for 45 minutes, get a lucky goal, and then they get a couple in the second half. So I think the more games Spurs and Arsenal are going to play to catch up with the games in hand they've got, the bleaker it's going to look for our top four hopes. Because I don't really see us improving too much between now and the end of the season. So,
yeah, I kind of feel the same. The only bright side is that one of the games in hand for both teams is Spurs against Arsenal. So they've got to play each other, which obviously results in a drop points for someone or both. And Arsenal have got Liverpool to play this week and Villa away, which is not easy. I think Spurs have got one. One of their games is a bit of a difficult one. Spurs have got West Ham as well as part of their game. So kind of by the end of the international break, when it starts up again, they'll be pretty much level on games with us now, because our Liverpool game has got postponed because of the FA Cup. Their FA Cup progress. So yeah, when we come back for the international break, we'll kind of know where we're at, I guess, and we'll for the running. But James, your thoughts on Saturday evening's game? Are you worried about the fact that Spurs have demolished Everton? Not a very good Everton side, it must be said, but
I'm not worried about that specifically, because Everton have been very Everton-y this season, despite the change of manager and all of that. They've still not necessarily found what they're going to need going forward. Because they had a tough game the other day, didn't they, against, who was that, Boreham Wood?
Yeah.
And I know that wasn't necessarily their first 11, but again, those kind of games, it's sort of shaky ground. They won in the end, obviously, but I remember seeing when it got to half-time, they were sort of 0-0, and I thought, okay, it's the kind of game that they'd want to be winning comfortably. But no, so So Spurs beat them 5-0. Yeah, well, Spurs, yeah, they can do that, though. They've got such good players. And it's the kind of thing of keeping Kane and Son quiet. Because if we don't, then we're in big trouble. If this defence can't stand up against those two and be counted, then I don't know. I mean, Kane has kind of done... He's done wonders, but as you said, when Spurs are up, they're up. Yeah, but when they're down, they're down. When they're halfway up, they're neither up nor down. But Kane kind of likes to drop back and sort of ping balls into Son, doesn't he? Like, he can sort of, you know, Son, he can sort of like drop deeper into the kind of quarterback role when he's not himself up front scoring the goals. And it's just so frustrating that they can do that. It's almost like having two Harry Kanes on the pitch at times. but when they've lost, they've had these baffling sort of results, haven't they? And I don't know. It's a Conte team.
They're pretty similar to us in a sense, really. You just don't know what team's going to turn up, because they've obviously got the players to perform pretty well and, you know, beat anybody on the day, really. But yeah, it's just when it goes wrong, it tends to go wrong in a similar fashion to us. But I think in the back of my mind is the result from last year, obviously. That Martial sending off, and I think, what was it, 6-1 we lost at home, was it? I think Bruno got a penalty early on.
6-1, yeah.
Yeah, we were 1-0 up, weren't we, and then it all went to shit. But there's that sort of result in the back of your mind where you're thinking, you know, it's not too dissimilar team. The United team low on confidence, which it was at that point as well, or low on fitness, I think, at that point, actually, after like the short pre-season last season. Yeah, that's the one thing that worries me, and we really can't afford to drop any points against them if we're going to have any chance of coming in top four. I mean, I do think that's slipping away now. The only saving grace is the fixtures that both teams have got, that, you know, potentially they're not going to pick up full points, but then again, Arsenal are actually ahead of us legitimately already, so we've got to go away to them as well.
And do you know what? Arsenal playing well as well.
Yeah. Which you got to give them the due. They have improved. They've stuck with Arteta, and at the moment, it's, you know, it's working. It'd be a bit upsetting, wouldn't it, if we lose out the top four space to Arsenal after ribbing them for so many years. But that is the way it is. We'll see what happens on Saturday. Any score predictions before we shoot off? Josh, I'll start with you.
I'm gonna go 1-1. You know,
yeah. Like... Yeah, don't depress us. I think there'll be goals for both sides. I think there could be a high scoring draw. At the very least, that's what we're hoping for, isn't it? I don't just no defeat. I can't take another one. But James, your prediction.
I'm going to be optimistic against my better judgment. I don't know. My heart is singing loud about this. I just feel, ever since about 2015, watching United, there's always been, when they've not played well or they've had a few sort of iffy results, you just feel like one game is going to be the one that this is where we show up. This is where we show who we are. These are not bad players. Some of them aren't as good as they perhaps could be, but these are good players, really. And they've not become terrible overnight. They're underperforming. And if they get it together, you do get the feeling that they can achieve things. Maybe not win the league, but they can, Jesus, you know, be better than we are in the league position anyway. This is a team that should. I'm baffled that we're in a desperate fight for the top four. Who'd have thought that? Again, it's maybe a whole other episode we could talk about how this came to be, but it's just, you wouldn't believe it, would you? If I told you, oh, United are going to be in fifth this time, you'd go, no, you've got the wrong script there. That's not how it works, surely. Yeah. We've got Cristiano Ronaldo, we've got Rafael Varane. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to go. I can't believe I'm saying it. 2-0 to United.
2-0 to United.
And if it comes off, I'm going to look like a hero if it comes off. But I've got to be positive, and that's kind of what football's all about. I am a realist, and I'm very rarely an optimist. I always see the worst situation and work backwards from that, in terms of what could potentially happen. But surely, come on. They've got to.
James. You were ending on a positive.
I'm ending on a positive, though, yes. 2-0. Yes, 2-0 to United. I won't go full Matthew Caroline and do goal scorers, because I don't know, but...
No one needs that.
Hope the Reds.
I'm hoping it's probably going to be like maybe the sixth or seventh game I've enjoyed watching United this season, which is, I've got full hope that it will finally happen, that we'll play a decent game all the way through, which, yeah, like I said, it's just very rarely happened this season. But hopefully, you know, they have to turn the corner at some point, don't they? And
it's Tottenham.
Lads, it's Tottenham. Yeah. Please don't come back to bite us on the ass. Yeah,
he's going to bite me.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna leave it there for this week anyway. Thank you for joining me, you two, after a game that really no one wanted to talk about, but we had to hash it out. So these two have been Josh and James. I've been Simon. We've been the Devil's Trident podcast, and we may see you after the Tottenham game, but if not, definitely after the Atletico game. So one of those two games, we will see you then. Okay, see you later.